Another successful Grafton Carnival wrapped up yesterday, and joining us on the line is Sydney Morning Herald racing journalist and expert Adam Pengilly. Good morning, Adam.
Morning, Laurie. Morning, TK. How are you going, guys?
Going very well, mate. Now, Chrissy Muntz, he won yesterday as a trainer of the Grafton Cup.
Yeah, fantastic to see Chris win his first Grafton Cup with First Crush. Now, he won the race twice as a jockey, going way back to 1999 and 2005, and Chris has sort of made no secret about the fact that once he started up as a trainer a couple of years ago, he wanted to try and build his stable pretty quickly and pretty swiftly, and obviously winning some feature races is probably going to be a key plank of that. And if you're watching the replay now on Sky Racing 1, First Crush, an absolutely torrid run. He was wide the whole way, and Chris made some comments after the race that halfway through the race, he sort of thought, I'm just going to go back to the stable and just wait for Mark Duplessis and maybe give him a piece of his mind, but the horse was just fit enough to get the job done. He obviously run well in stakes grade company up in Queensland and a couple of starts prior. And now Chris has got his first Grafton Cup, so it's great to see Chris get that feature race win on the board. And I'm interested to see what his stable can do in the next sort of 12 to 18 months as well.
Yeah, plenty of them have made a really successful transition, but Chris has made it quickly, hasn't he, really, when you think about it, Adam?
Yeah, he has, TK. He's a determined bugger as well, you know. When he puts his mind to something, he really has a crack. So he's made no secret of his desire to build up his numbers really, really quickly, which some people sort of looked at and thought, okay, you sure you know what you're doing here? Do you want to start off with a bit of a smaller boutique stable here and build slowly? But he said he wants to be winning premierships up there in Brisbane and trying to win as many group races as he possibly can. So he's going about it the right way at the moment, boys.
Have we got any international raiders coming over to attack the Melbourne Cup this year?
Yeah, it looks like we have a couple of Japanese horses at the moment, Laurie. The Racing Victoria sort of announced yesterday that a couple of these Japanese have sort of signalled their intention to travel down for the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup, and I'm speaking Chestnut Coat and Soul Impact. Now, they've both won a couple of stakes races over there back in Japan and look like they're sort of perfect type of horses and come over here and not get a whole heap of weight. They're sort of still progressive horses on the way up. So I think that's probably the first sign that we're going to get a pretty big international contingent for the Melbourne Spring Carnival later this year, because we've already got horses like Magic Circle. Marmelo, who started favourite at the Melbourne Cup last year, is probably going to be returning down under for the Melbourne Cup. He'll probably only have one run this year rather than doing what he did last year when he ran really well in the Caulfield Cup and just didn't quite back up in the Melbourne Cup. And also Red Vernon for Ed Dunlop, who we know has travelled down here many, many years before with Red Cadeau. So there's at least five horses at the moment, boys, that have sort of signalled their intention, or their connections have signalled their intention to come down for the big cup races later in the year. I imagine there'll be a few more added in the next month or two as well.
Massive fan of the Japanese Raiders. Chestnut Coat is a winner of four starts, and he's currently rated a $15 chance, while Soul Impact is the outsider of the two, mate, $41. So in the Caulfield Cup, Chestnut Coat at $26 for the Caulfield Cup.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, TK, I think they met just recently in a recent. I think maybe Soul Impact might have beat Chestnut Coat home. So obviously we'll try and do a bit more form on them later in the year and get a bit of a better guide how they're going about their business at Werribee. But as we know, when they bring these Japanese horses down for their cups races, you've got to respect them enormously.
Yeah, we'll be interesting to see who gets the ride too with some of our jockeys up there now. Yeah, like you've seen, Craig Williams is always forefront with Japanese horses. You've got Hugh Bowman, you've got Zach Purton. They love jumping on the Japanese horses.
Yeah, they do, TK. I think I read somewhere yesterday that they've sort of signalled provisionally they've got a couple of jockeys booked for those races later in the year. I think there's a young boy, a Japanese boy, who's riding in Adelaide.
Adelaide, yeah.
He's going to come across and ride one of them. I think there's another Japanese rider back home who's likely to travel out as well. So at this stage, it doesn't look like they're going to be using any Australian jockeys or any Australian expats like Zach, who's over in Hong Kong. But obviously there's a lot of water to go under the bridge until we sort of get to October and November.
Yeah.
They're racing at Rose Hill, mate, on the weekend. Have you got a tip for our listeners?
Yeah, just the one for us, Laurie. Race 6, number 9, Rakeek. Oh, he had the flashing light on first up. He was absolutely outstanding over 1,500 metres, threading his way through the field and attacking the line really hard. Another race where Chris Wallace got a ton of horses, one of these typical middle-distance winter races where Chris has probably got five or six runners. But I thought Rakeek was probably the best of them. His second-up stats are fantastic. Never missed a place second up in his career. I think he gets some even luck in running. He should be very hard to hold out. So race 6, number 9, Rakeek at Rose Hill tomorrow, boys.
You got a solution for the State of Origin Man of the Series voting?
Don't go there, TK. Don't go there. Don't mention the war.
All right. Good. That means you've got no solution, which is terrific.
Well, I did mention to you yesterday, boys, I wouldn't mind seeing the selectors put their head together just for 5 minutes after Game 3. But as Laurie mentioned on the program yesterday, it's probably a little bit impractical given all their different duties on the night.
Well, no, but it's still that's still only subjective.
Yeah.
There's no process in that.
It is. I understand that. But I also wrote in today's paper suggesting that a scenario similar to the NBA finals where there's, I think there's 11 media representatives. I'm not suggesting it needs to be media representatives, but 11 people after the final game of the series just cast one single vote for who they thought was the MVP of the NBA final series. So maybe rather than we can take out that process of lodging votes after games 1, 2, and 3 and just maybe have a little bit more time for a bit of perspective at the end of game 3 and just lodging one single vote and then going from there. Again, it's probably not a foolproof system, but I'm just tossing up a few ideas. Yeah. See how we go.
Well, that's what we're all about, ideas, because a lot of people aren't happy with this system. There's a couple of, before you go.
They won't be happy with the new one either, by the way.
No, they won't. But a couple of SMSs were after solutions. Someone's texted in, my solution is to have the NRL coaches vote, one vote on each match, and then overall, the man who receives the most votes, he gets the Billy Slater medal. The only problem with that would be the bias. Ivan Cleary was voting, and Nathan Cleary was one of the better players, and he deserved to get 1 point. Ivan would be in the situation where he'd be feeling uncomfortable giving it to Nathan.